You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
The Suns smoked the Nuggets last night, 123-98. It wasn't even that close. Up 2-0. Tonight, Nets-Bucks Game 3, Clippers-Jazz Game 2. Following the loss last night, the Nuggets head coach Michael Malone said his team quit.
They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for Game 3, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
Coach, can you name the names of everybody who quit? Did the entire team quit? Tell me who didn't quit last night. The worst thing you can ever say about an athlete is you quit. Michael Malone is not Bill Belichick. He's not Phil Jackson. He's not Pat Riley. They got rings. Michael Malone, don't call him Mike, calling out his team, maybe they respond. Maybe he should understand, too, the Phoenix Suns are a better team. They're a whole lot healthier than the Nuggets are. Did the MVP quit last night? Did the Joker quit last night? Or was he the guy who didn't quit? And can't you say this to your team in the locker room? And now I know Michael Malone was saying, hey, you know, include me in this. Did he quit? How did he quit? Like, at what point did you quit coaching? I just don't understand this. Now, do I like that we get all this information? Do I like that it's full disclosure? Do I like that they're going to say something in front of the media? Yeah, it makes my job easier. But I don't play for the Nuggets. If I played for the Nuggets, I would have been livid with my coach. You want to say something to us, you say something to us as a team. Don't do this through the media. Because then I would say, Coach, who quit? Did I quit? How about we aren't as good as the Phoenix Suns? The Suns played extremely well. We don't have our starting backcourt. Chris Paul was wonderful last night. But are you telling me that Michael Porter Jr., who has a bad back, he quit last night? Did the Joker quit last night? I'm sure they're going to respond. I'm sure they'll play a whole lot better in Game 3 back home. But don't call out your team and say they quit. Because it starts with you. How did you let them quit? Can't you spin this and make it positive? Where you say, look, I love that we had guys out there who were hurt, but we were still playing hard. When we go back home, we're going to regroup here. Do I need to call you out in front of the media to then make me look better by calling you out in front of the media? And it felt like, you know, it was more of a PR move here. Oh, you know what? I can't send a message to my team by talking to my team. I'm going to send a message through the media. I guess it can work. I guess the players will be like, oh, we'll show him we don't quit. Really? You're just not a better team. The Phoenix Suns are a better team. You might say, look, we're trying to match them and we can't right now. This is a Phoenix Suns team that had a better record than the Nuggets during the regular season. I think we look at the Suns and we go, oh, those cuddly Suns. Oh, look at them. Remember the bubble Suns? Yeah. And then we saw what happened during the regular season. And you're watching what's happening during the postseason. Now, do I think if the Lakers were healthy, they would have beaten the Phoenix Suns? I do. But they weren't. Did the Lakers quit? Did Frank Vogel come out and say, hey, we quit? I just don't like when coaches do that. Like, do you see that in a movie? Just talk to your team. How many guys? 12? 13? Guys, come here. We have to understand what's at stake here. Do I have to tell you what's at stake here? Let's be in this together. I got to make adjustments. Bear with me. We're going to try to counter some of the things that they did. And we're going to be better in Game 3 when we go home. and I got to do my job better. Does that resonate a little bit more with your team when you talk to them as grownups instead of going, and we quit? Play the beginning part of that again here with Michael Malone.
They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. Right. I may have a hard time coming up with
five. Okay, so that's – I don't know where you're going to find these guys. Like, you don't look down the roster and down on the bench and go, oh, my God, did you see who showed up who's going to play for us? No, you know the roster here. But I didn't like it. I didn't like when I heard it. But Michael Malone knows his team, obviously far better than I know the Nuggets. I would just know that in a situation like that, if a coach says publicly we quit, now the media goes to you and says, did you quit? Nat, you've opened the door. I'm allowed to ask you that. Coach said you quit. Hey, Joker, did you quit? Who quit? Did you notice anybody quitting out there? I don't think you want to go down that road. Yes, Heaton.
Because now the whole series is going to be, remember that time the Nuggets quit? It's like, dang, that's...
Yeah. It just hangs there. Yeah, McLovin.
Have the Bucks quit a little bit? If you're the Bucks coach, are you thinking that? Like, what do teams quit? Because there's no way the Bucks talent-wise are that far behind the Nets.
Okay, there are times when you're just not good enough. Does that mean you quit?
But this doesn't seem like, I'm looking at the rosters, this doesn't seem like times that, like, the Nuggets shouldn't be getting blown out, should they? They have the MVP.
I know, but it feels like it's 1-on-5.
Yeah, they have a bunch of scrubs around them. That's true.
It's just not good. It's just not good. Like, Will Barton has been out 7 weeks with a hamstring injury. He scored 10 points. He played 15 minutes. Okay. But it feels like he's at least trying. Michael Malone was happy with Barton's performance. He says that it's embarrassing that a guy that hasn't been able to play for 7 weeks was out there leaving it all on the line. I don't feel like anyone else did. Somebody then asked the Joker, did you quit? And he says, I know I didn't quit. He says that maybe the Nuggets, he says he didn't feel like the Nuggets quit. Maybe they hung their heads a little bit there. Yeah, Paul.
You could look at this, and everyone talks about defense and all this stuff, and quitting and trying. The Brooklyn Nets are shooting 44% from three. The Milwaukee Bucks are shooting 30%. The math just adds up. If you can shoot threes, you're probably going to win. The Phoenix Suns are shooting 39% from three. They're second in the league. Free throw percentage. Guess who the best teams are in free throw percentage in the postseason? The Nets, the Clippers, the Suns, the Hawks. You know the teams that are out? The Mavericks are out. The Celtics are out. The Lakers are out. They're the poorest free throw shooting teams.
McLovin, you got a poll question for me today?
Yeah, so we have a couple directions. Quick question on NBA. Is it worse to have a lack of effort or a lack of talent? If you're a fan, which is the worst of the two scenarios?
You can't create talent. Like, I can create effort. I think a lack of talent, that usually would be the deciding factor. Yes, Eden.
But there's nothing worse than watching a bunch of super talented people not try. Guys who aren't very talented, but man, they're working real hard. That's fun where you're like, all right, I could get behind these guys. But if they're super talented and they're not doing anything, you're like, guy, what the hell? You guys are supposed to be awesome.
But I can't teach talent. I can teach effort. I can't teach. Go out there and be great. I'm not any good.
I'm trying.
Yeah. Don't quit. Like Fritzy, when he plays basketball, or Mario, they play hard. They're just not any good.
Wow.
Yes, Tom.
I agree with Seton. If you're not living up to expectations, that's the most frustrating thing. If I'm watching a game, or especially my favorite team, and they've got a roster that should be going far, and they're just laying eggs because it looks like they just don't care, or I care more than them sitting in my living room, that's far worse than just the group that we have isn't that good yet.
Thank you, Todd. I don't know what it looks like when a team quits. Like, do they just, like, drop their hands down, that they try to miss shots, they don't care, they blame each other, they point fingers, they don't play defense? Like, what is quitting? What does quitting look like? You're not diving on the floor. I was fake hustle. I was fake hustle. Man, I was, because if I just wanted to get the coach to notice me, and I could fake hustle like the best of them. Doesn't matter. It wasn't any good. But, man, that coach knew I was out there. I'm playing hard, coach. Yeah, see.
So what's the difference between fake hustle and really hustling? Like, if the coach is out there, if you're, like, putting in all this effort to make it look like you're hustling, why don't you just really hustle?
Well, no. There are times when you do fake hustle because I want to – when you dive for a loose ball and you know you're not going to get the loose ball. All it is for basically people to see, oh, my God, did you see what that guy did?
But that's it sounds like disingenuous hustle.
Yes, yeah. And I led the league in disingenuous hustle.
You had no chance at that.
I wanted to, because I didn't want to play defense, but I wanted the coach to know that, God, I was trying so hard. Trying so hard.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. He joins us on the program as we've been talking about spin rate and doctoring the baseball. What's illegal? What's cheating? You got players calling out players. Pete Alonso of the Mets says there's a conspiracy theory to keep down salaries in certain years. Oh, Jeff, let's sort through this. When did this become a story?
A decade ago. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that, Dan. I wrote a story when I was with Yahoo Sports. I think it was 8 years ago now. I wrote a story about how pitchers are starting to use sunscreen and rosin in order to get a little bit of a sticky feel on their hands. And I don't know if you remember this, but Clay Buchholz was pitching at Rogers Center indoors and had sunscreen on his arm. That's when you knew there was an issue here. When Clay Buchholz is running his hands through his hair and he's got like Jerry curl going on in back and you see on his arm and he keeps going to his arm and there's sunscreen there in a domed stadium. I was like, okay, you know, ball players love to cheat. Like that's what this comes down to, is it not? Is this not just a reminder that baseball players love pushing boundaries as far as humanly possible? And that if you, and I mean you as Major League Baseball writ large, give a baseball player an inch, Dan, they will take a marathon. Like that's just what they do and how I think they're wired and programmed. And it's interesting thinking about other sports, like is the desire to push your performance to different levels, doing things that are in a very gray area, prevalent in any other sports? I mean, I don't know baseball, or I don't know football and basketball and hockey as well. And I'd love to hear your answer to that, because I don't know if this is just a thing that's unique to baseball or if it exists everywhere.
But it feels like this just started to escalate a month ago, that it got really big. And now I watched Garrett Cole last night. I tuned into the Twins-Yankees game just to watch Garrett Cole on the mound to see what he did or what he didn't do. A very impressive performance by him. But now all of a sudden baseball is going to be closely monitoring what pitchers – how do they do this? What you wear? Are we – inspecting you inning by inning?
Okay, I want to get back first to your first question. I say 10 years, that's a little bit of a flip answer, because this is something that's really accelerated over the last probably 3 years or so, when guys graduated from sunscreen and rosin to some of these other substances. And there have been pitchers out there, Dan, who for a while now have had their own like home brew. I mean, I have heard of one who takes like a firm grip stick and melts it down and mixes it with Coca-Cola and like cooks it inside of a Coke can. It's like baseball heroin. And they go out and use this and get extreme spin. And I think, you know, when Major League Baseball did not crack down and essentially turned a blind eye to guys who were using increasingly sticky substances, others all of a sudden are like, well, if they're doing it, they're getting advantages that I don't have, and I don't want to get passed by. I don't want to lose out on money. I don't want my team to be disadvantaged because of this. So I'm just going to join in the party as long as the league isn't saying anything about it. And that's the, you know, I don't think this is the same as steroids. I think the parallels, though, are that players felt like they were going to be missing out on opportunities, or they were going to fall behind if they didn't do it. And the league, because it didn't say anything, emboldened players to do that. How this is going to turn out, it's going to be a disaster. I mean, umpires who already have a contentious relationship with players are literally going to be TSAing them like 10 times a game. And there are going to be some players who get angry at the implication that they might be cheating. There are going to be some players who, when they get caught, which is bound to happen, are denying it. If players actually are, Dan, scared straight by the possibility of being caught, then if umpires aren't catching anyone, it's going to look like they're not doing their job. Like, there are just all kinds of minefields. But Major League Baseball believes this is important enough now to make it a priority.
Here's my problem with this, though, Jeff, that, you know, we want to have more offense. Oh, we got too much offense. Now we want to have a little more of an equal footing. Oh, wait, they're too good on this side. Now we got to help the hitters. So next year, we're going to help the hitters. This year, we've helped the pitchers. Like, they're back and forth. They got to make up their mind. What kind of game do you want? And then enforce the rules, because somebody using an illegal substance, it's called an illegal substance. Is that cheating? Like, what? It's varying degrees of cheating. And then, like, how much is too much? How much is just enough that we're going to allow you with the unwritten rules of baseball?
Yeah, I look at it this way. If you have a rule that is written, either apply the rule or get rid of it. And if you are going to apply it and player is going to break it, then that to me is cheating. It is clearly trying to get an advantage on field over an opponent, and, you know, doing so by hook, or in this situation by crook. And in terms of baseball's helter-skelterness, I think in this situation there's actually some nobility to it, Dan, because I'm glad you tuned in to watch baseball. A lot of people aren't, and they should be. They should be incentivized to watch Shohei Ohtani and watch Jacob deGrom and watch Tatis and Acuna and Guerrero Jr. and watch Juan Soto and watch all of these really brilliant ballplayers who populate the big leagues these days. But the game stinks right now. And if you ask anybody, and I mean anybody inside of the sport, they will tell you that strikeouts have become too prevalent and the game has slowed down too much, and that creating some action in the game is imperative for its long-term and short-term survival. And so to do something where you make the pitchers a little less dominant, I actually don't think that's a problematic thing, even if it does continue on this trend of trying to do too much or trying to manipulate the game too much.
I'm watching the Yankees-Twins game, and they were showing batting averages, and I thought they were telling you how much a player weighed. I thought it was like, oh, he weighs 188. Oh, he's 176. Oh, there's somebody who weighs 235. And then I realized,
ding,
oh, my God, these are batting averages.
Yeah.
And you're going, okay, so there is something to this. We had Fernando Tatis Jr. on yesterday, and he said, I'm seeing pitches I've never seen before. Now, granted, he's a young player, but he's saying, I'm at the plate, and I'm seeing things that I've never seen before. That, to me, sounds a little more alarming than just, hey, I need a little grip on the ball so my slider doesn't get away from me.
Right, and These two things are interrelated, because for a long time, I think the reason that it's coming to a head now is the fact that the sport is hitting 237. And hitters are like, okay, enough. Like, for years, pitchers have told us that they need some tack on the ball in order not to let it fly, in order to keep things safe. And I do believe, Dan, there's some validity to that, because what teams are asking pitchers to do now and what pitchers feel like they have to do is go max effort. And when you go max effort and you're throwing stuff with the arms that guys have now at 97 to 100, or you're trying to rip off a slider, Jacob DeGrom, who, by the way, I don't think uses anything, but Jacob DeGrom throws a slider 93. His slider is 93 miles per hour. It's silly stuff that we're seeing across the game, but it transitioned from we need a little bit of grip to, oh my God, this grip works really well. I think I'm going to go and try and use some industrial adhesive that strongmen are using to lift Atlas stones. Like, that's where we are right now, where they've gone and just taken something that made sense and just taken it too far.
As a former pitcher told me last night, he said, they're throwing frickin' frisbees. It's like wiffle ball. And he said, we're not supposed to be able to do that with the baseball normally, naturally.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. I don't want to just blame this, Dan, on foreign substances. I think you're still going to see – and here's the path I think it's going to take. I think a lot of guys have been scared straight already and are going to stop. I think there are going to be a few who continue using just the way there are some who continue using steroids, even when there are penalties in place these days. You're still going to see nasty pitches, though, because it's not just the tacky stuff that's doing it. The technology – more than the sticky stuff, I think, has led to this point. And by the technology, I mean guys go into labs, like literal pitch creation labs right now, where they look at slow motion video of what they're doing, where they're releasing the ball, what the spin is coming off. They do, I mean, they put pressures on different fingers and try to figure out, okay, how do I create this optimal pitch that moves to get strikeouts? That's where most of it is happening right now. The sticky stuff just exacerbates it.
It's always great to talk to you. See, there's a benefit from this because it gave us an opportunity to talk to you again, Jeff. So I think it's a win-win for all of us here.
Thank you, baseball, for cheating. I truly appreciate it.
That's Jeff Passan. He's the baseball insider for the Mothership.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's Michael Kay, the Yankee broadcaster, the Yes Network. Get your copy of Michael's new book, Center Stage, My Most Fascinating Interviews, from A-Rod to Jay-Z, now available online and wherever books are sold. Michael joins us now. When's the last time an interview went bad?
You mean an interview with me?
Yeah. Well, that you conducted.
Probably on Center Stage. There was a couple of people that just didn't want to play very much. So, you kind of coax them. I'm sure you've had that as well. And then you hope that they kind of thaw out of it. And then it goes well after that. But the books, the interviews in the books, those went well.
So the ones that didn't go well didn't make the book.
Right, right. Dennis Quaid didn't go well. He didn't feel like he wanted to be there. But it worked out.
I remember interviewing Tonya Harding, and it didn't go well, but it spectacularly didn't go well. Therefore, you're witnessing a car wreck. And that's one of those where I was uncomfortable. She was uncomfortable. But the fact that, like, sometimes you let that go. You know that's for the audience, and then they get to – it's almost like you're eavesdropping. And it was awful. But you had to have a visceral reaction to it, because you're going, oh my God, is this actually on the air? And, you know, so I've had those moments, but where you can't hide. At least you get to tape yours, I'm guessing. All of these interviews are taped.
Yes, they're all taped so they could be edited. And you're right, you don't want a fender bender. You want to get T-boned.
The one, like, you interview a lot of different people. Quentin Tarantino, I mean, all walks of life there. But it feels like that common thread is they are sports fans to a certain degree. But did you find out that there's certain guys that maybe, like, is Quentin Tarantino a sports fan?
He's a little bit of a sports fan. And in order for it to be booked and for the YES Network to be on cable systems, it has to be some kind of connection to sports. So if he watched the game, we'll say, okay, there's your connection to sports. But Quentin Tarantino was fascinating. And just to talk to him and get into the process of how he wrote the movies, and he writes the movies in longhand. He doesn't even use a computer. That's kind of stuff I find fascinating. So, but they all have a little bit of a connection to sports for sure.
What jumps out, if you said to people wanting to buy this for Father's Day, the one interview you must read is which one?
My favorite one of the 250 interviews we did was Larry David, because I went in with some trepidation because I was such a big fan of Seinfeld and of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I wondered if I was going to get that Larry David. And the remarkable thing is he is that Larry David, but he's not as mean. You know, he'll tell you exactly what he's thinking, but I think he takes a little bit of the edge off in real life. He even said, if I did the things I say in Curb in real life, people would punch me out. And you always wonder on Curb when you're watching it, why doesn't somebody hit him? And he realizes that. But from that interview alone, Dan, he and I have become kind of friends, which I think is remarkable. I have such great respect for his talent, and he's just a great guy, and he is a huge, huge sports fan.
Yeah, we've had him on a few times, and you're right. You're not quite sure what you're getting, but there's part of you that hopes you're getting Larry David from Curb. You're just not sure if that Larry David's going to show up. And then, you know, ultimately it does. In some form, you're like, oh, my God, that sounds like that would be an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. The book is My Most Fascinating Interviews from A-Rod to Jay-Z. It's called Center Stage. We're talking to Michael Kay, the Yankee broadcaster. Recap the week that the Yankees have had so far.
Well, obviously, the Red Sox series, I think, was very illuminating that this is a team that has some issues. This is a team that's kept afloat because of pitching. Nobody thought that their pitching was going to be this good. Everybody thought that they'd hit over 300 home runs and they would slug their way to winning the American League. The hitting has not been there. But the greatest tonic for the New York Yankees over the last 20 years, Dan, has been the Minnesota Twins. So they limp into Minnesota, and the first two games in Minnesota, everything you'd want it to be. Yesterday, Stanton hits two home runs. But the biggest part of the week has to be the Gerrit Cole stuff. Josh Donaldson throwing him under the bus. Gerrit Cole being asked a direct question about what type of stickum that he uses, and he kind of hems and haws. And then yesterday he goes out. And obviously he's working without anything, if he ever has worked with anything. And he's throwing 100 miles an hour. So I think that was the best way to answer it back.
Could Yankee PR have rescued Gerrit Cole in that first press conference?
I was thinking about, I hate to place blame, but I think Scott Boras, who's his agent, and Gerrit's really bright. He's one of the brightest guys that I've ever interviewed. And Yankee PR, maybe they should have sat together. This question is going to be there. This is the way you should answer. And it seemed like he was surprised. And that surprised me. Why would you be surprised at that question? That's the only question that anybody wants to talk about. Then he tried to clean it up a little bit, you know, after the game yesterday and said, this isn't really the venue or the forum for it. And I'm wondering, well, what is? So he's going to have to answer that question at some point. And there's so many ways he can answer it and not throw people under the bus and not indict himself. But he didn't go that route.
Your comments or your thought, and this is why I want to have you on. Josh Donaldson said what he said about Gerrit Cole and some other pitchers, and at least the inference was you were okay with Gerrit Cole throwing at Josh Donaldson.
That was not the inference.
Okay.
What I said on my radio show was, God didn't give me talent because he knows that I'm a vindictive human being. I have a laminated list in my back pocket, Dan, for people that have crossed me. So I said that if I happened to be Gerrit Cole, I didn't advocate for Gerrit Cole to do it, I would have drilled Josh Donaldson in the ribs.
Okay.
And then everybody took it and said that I said that Gerrit Cole should do it. No, Gerrit Cole shouldn't do it because Gerrit Cole is too important to the Yankees. he would be suspended. There could be a brawl. People could get hurt. But sick Michael Kay, if I was on the mound, I would have done it.
Let's run down the list of people that you don't like, Mike.
Oh, there's so many. I don't know if we want to go there, but there's a lot of people, you know, radio and television columnists. I particularly just, yeah, there's a lot of people I really don't particularly have at a party at. Let's put it that way.
There's this kind of gray area, though, of if you put pine tar on something, on the ball or whatever, like that's part of the game. But then if I put something that's a little better than pine tar on it, then I'm cheating. It's unwritten rules, written rules, like trying to figure all of this out. You got pitchers who are dominating. It used to be hitters were dominating. Now we want to help out the hitters. And I'd liken it to a game of teeter-totter, a taffy pole here. Like, what does baseball want to be? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, that's the problem, Dan. You could place the blame on the pitchers and the hitters that did the steroids, but I think Major League Baseball is a little bit to blame. This is a rule that's been on the books forever. You can't have a foreign substance on the ball. It has never been enforced, ever. Now, all of a sudden, in the middle of a season, you say you're going to enforce it, and you put one of your biggest stars, Gerrit Cole, unfairly under the spotlight as the poster child for this. I think it's wrong. I really do. Talked to Al Leiter yesterday. He said 95% of people who pitched in Major League history use something on the ball to actually get a grip. But what's happened now, Dan, is that really smart people have come up with the fact if we really get a good grip, we could weaponize it and increase our spin rate. So that makes it harder to hit, and then it becomes a weapon rather than a tool. And that's where we are right now. And Major League Baseball says that within a week, they're going to start cracking down on it. And they're going to check pitchers up to 10 times a game. Dan, you're talking about pace of game? How's that going to be?
And the reason why this becomes a bigger story, ESPN grabs a hold of it, and you got the Yankees star pitcher. Yep. You know, if this is Madison Bumgarner, nobody cares. If it's a Twins pitcher, nobody cares. It's the Yankees, and it's ESPN has picked up this story. And now, I mean, I watched the game last night just to watch Gerrit Cole. On the mound, that's it. I didn't care that, you know, Stanton hit a couple of bombs. I wanted to see his mannerisms. Like it's, and not that this is why we should watch a baseball game, but I did search out to watch this game last night. I don't know if baseball benefits. Like, does any publicity, good publicity, work with baseball right now?
I mean, that's the old adage, right? And I was off last night. I watched every second of the game because I wanted to see how he was going to pitch. And I think the only thing that we got out of yesterday was when he struck out Donaldson the first two times, there was that small instant where he looked like he stared at him, like, here's your stick-em, that sort of deal. But in a way, if you could bring more eyes to baseball games that might not have been there, that's a good thing. But I just get the feeling, Dan, I don't know if you feel the same way, baseball seems like it shoots itself in the foot so much. It's such a great game. In its purest form, it's such a perfect game. But then we get moments like this where it embarrasses itself, and it's got to clean this stuff up. It shouldn't weaponize all these rules and use them in collective bargaining agreements and things like that. Well, we'll give you the DH if you give us this, and we'll raise the seams on the baseball if you give us that. That doesn't work. I mean, this should all be behind the scenes where we don't have to see the dirty laundry.
Who's the person you're waiting to interview?
Bruce Springsteen. Have you ever interviewed him?
No, I have not.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
This is how close I came to interviewing Bruce Springsteen. Al Leiter was with us in the studio, and Al was bragging that he had Springsteen's phone number. And we're live on the air, and I said, would you call Bruce? And Al dialed him up, and he was really nervous because he's thinking, I may not get to keep – Bruce is going to change the number as soon as I call. And he left a message for Bruce Springsteen during our show saying, hey, it's Al. I'm on the Dan Patrick Show. Can you call me back, basically? We didn't hear back from Springsteen. That's as close as I've come.
I met Springsteen once in the Yankee clubhouse, and he's walking by. And I never do this because people want their privacy. I just walked up because I so love his music. I said, I just want to tell you that you've written the soundtrack to my life. And he looked at me and go, soundtrack to your life. Yeah, I like that. So that was good enough for me.
Fritzy has Bruce Springsteen impersonation, since you're a big Bruce fan. I think you might enjoy this. This is, if you close your eyes, I think it's going to sound like Springsteen, or maybe not. Okay, Todd.
Well, all right, come on down. After she put her kiss to bed, about to file a great baseball play back in high school. Woo-hoo. All right. Oh yeah.
So, what do you think, Mike?
Wow. Can I book Fritzy on 17?
All right.
Hey, good luck with the book, Michael. Thank you. It's great talking to you again.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Cameron Kinley, former Navy cornerback. I'll give you the backstory here. Went undrafted, team captain. He's the class president, gave the commencement speech at the Naval Academy. Had an outside chance to win a roster spot with the Buccaneers. He would be a special teamer, maybe a fifth cornerback there. The Chiefs also had an interest in him as well. And Cameron told the Tampa Bay Times he chose the Buccaneers due to a family connection to coaches in the organization. His father was a college teammate of one of the assistant coaches on the roster. And his older brother played under Bruce Arians with the Cardinals. So he was going to try out for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and see if he could make it as their fifth cornerback, a special teams guy. But the Naval Academy said no to his request. He was never trying to just leave the Naval Academy. He knew he still had his military commitment. He was going to try to defer that. And Cameron Kinley joining us on the program here. Tell me the process here, though, of trying to play in the NFL with that military commitment. What steps did you try to take to join the Buccaneers?
Right. So in the summer of 2019, President Trump endorsed this new policy, which is called the DTM, which allows service academy graduates to request to delay their commission in order to pursue professional sports. So you put together a package and your school signs off on the package and forwards it to the Secretary of Defense. So after I was picked up by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we got my package together, and then the Naval Academy signed off on it and forwarded it to the Secretary of Defense. And then it was denied by the acting Secretary of the Navy.
What reason were you given?
I was given no explanation, and I was told that there is no appeal process.
Is that why you're doing the interview?
You could say that. I just want to kind of get my story out there because I feel like it needs to be heard for sure. But yeah, it's definitely been a tough couple of weeks trying to deal with the situation.
Are you allowed to ask for an explanation?
Well, that's kind of the business that we're in the military. You know, I'm not owed an explanation. The acting Secretary of the Navy, simply it was up to his discretion to deny the package and not forward it. That's just a part of the way the DTM works. So he doesn't owe me an explanation. It would be nice to have one and just give me a sense of peace. But at the end of the day, I'm not really expecting one.
What kind of emotions do you have?
I remember when I found out, I was speechless. You know, I felt like I had a piece of me taken away. I just thought about all the hard work and all the adversity that I had to overcome to get to this point. And for someone to just take away my childhood dream, it definitely hurts, you know, and it's emotions that I'm still processing. I woke up this morning and I just felt kind of sick, head heavy. So it's definitely starting to take a toll on me.
What did you hear from the Buccaneers?
So my agents have been doing a lot of the communication with the team. So if things can get figured out by training camp, then they'll take me back. If not, then in 2 years, I'll be able to go back and try out as long as I'm still on the military reserve list.
Have you reached out to Keenan Reynolds?
He sent me he tweeted something now just telling me to keep my head up and to stay positive and that he feels for me. But I haven't really talked to too many other people who had success with the military and professional sports.
Yeah, Cameron, it seems random. It, you know, maybe you're not enough a high enough profile. You know, Keenan was pretty famous. You know, people thought maybe he was a Heisman Trophy guy. So I don't know if it's that David Robinson famously was able to go to the NBA, but he was high profile and it reflected in a positive way on the Naval Academy. I'm just trying to process this as well. Can you understand this or help me understand why one guy and not you?
Well, I don't think the profile has anything to do with it because I look at last year, there are four undrafted players from other academies that were able to use this package. And then this year alone, there's also three players from Air Force and a player from Army who all went undrafted that have been able to use this policy. And during the whole draft process, you know, I was able to, I was fortunate enough to have different interviews with Good Morning Football and ESPN, you know, so I felt like I was bringing good publicity to the Navy and to the Naval Academy. And then I went down to Ricky Minicamp and had a good performance down there. So I don't think the profile has anything to do with it. I'll be curious to figure out.
What's the next step?
So I'm getting ready to, I'm preparing for my career as a officer in the Navy now. I'm currently on my basket leave, and that expires on June 28th. And then I head to Annapolis for a temporary duty assignment until October. And then after that, I start my career path as an information warfare community officer.
You need Tom Brady on your side here, Cameron.
That'd be nice. If I could get TV12 to say something, I'd definitely appreciate that. But I understand.
Are you worried about any repercussions doing this interview?
It might happen, you know. But at the end of the day, I know where my heart is and I know where I stand. I feel like the common misconception is that I don't want to serve, and that's never been the case. It's never, ever been the case since I've been at the Academy, or else I would have transferred. You know, I'm excited to serve as an officer in the Navy, and I'm looking forward to that career. I just felt like I had the opportunity to do both, and I don't see why I'm not able to.
How many push-ups can you do right now?
I mean, I'm still in shape. I don't know the exact number, but if it's a competition, I keep going to the other.
If I said 100...
Yeah, I can knock out 100.
I didn't mean to insult you. Of course you could do 100. Yeah, I understand that. Good luck with the fight here, Cameron. We appreciate it. We'll be following this. And, you know, I wish you well, because I can understand the frustration there. Of you think you got something and you still want to commit to the military, and then it was taken away from you. So good luck with the next step, whatever that is.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on the show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.